Welcome to Tower and Smythe Consulting, a firm fueled by greed, duplicity, and moral decay. I'll give you a pro tip. You want to swim to the top? Lose a dead weight. You call it conscious. Where's my damn coffee? Let's roll it.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
We're all doing the same head bob. I like it. We're all like, yes.
Feels like Night of the Roxbury.
Right? Yeah. This is so awesome. So that's the actual song that plays when he's walking into Tyron Smythe Consulting. He's doing the voiceover.
It's a good song. Yep.
By the way, let's just, before we start going into all that, let's all introduce ourselves. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Horror Movie News, episode 6, I believe.
Ooh. Whoop, whoop.
And as your host, as always, I am Anthony Becerra, and you can follow me everywhere at Tony B. Dead, TonyBDED.
Hey, how's it going? My name is Carrie Lane. You can follow me online at Carrie D Lane. That's K-A-R-I-D-L-A-N-E.
And I'm Oliver Drennan. Follow me on all social media platforms at All A Dreamer.
Hey, Oliver.
What?
Who's that next to you?
Hi, I'm Joe Lynch, and that's at The Joe Lynch. T-H-E-J-O-E-L-Y-N-C-H.
It's Joe Lynch, guys.
This just felt natural.
I totally thought this was the intern that was getting us coffee. I'm sorry. Sorry, Joe Lynch.
And here it is.
Oh, thank you so much.
Just the way you like it. Sprite.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have Joe Lynch in studio today. Yeah. And what a pleasure it is.
Stop. No. Keep going. Okay, stop.
The great director, too. Mayhem.
Ooh, God, your intros are just second to none. Can you come to the premiere screening on Friday and just be the MC for it?
Just any day.
Done.
I'm there for you, Joe.
But you have to come in the blood.
I'll come drenched in blunch, like Carrie style.
That's on the dress code, clearly.
This has to be on the dress code.
Done. This is the easiest green light ever. It was so simple.
Green light, you heard it here first. Anthony Becerra confirms. All right. Well, let's get into it. First off, let's take care of some quick business. Where to follow us, this amazing podcast? On youtube.com/popcorntalknetwork, or you can follow us on Twitter at @horrornewsptn, and lastly, on our website, popcorntalknetwork.com. And now, let's get into our first segment, The Abyss. What have we been watching this past week?
The Abyss.
The Abyss.
Oh, no. Leviathan. No.
No.
Deep Star 6. Damn it. I know it's one of those underwater movies. Oh, that's the segment.
That's the segment.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
It's okay.
Damn
it.
Everyone gets that mixed up.
I failed already.
Okay. It's new, so it's okay. You get a pass.
All right. Thank God.
So, first up, what I saw...
This is everything that you guys have watched since last week?
Last
episode?
Yeah. Since about last episode, like what we've covered, what we've seen, anything really. Mainly horror, but you can throw, you can throw some, whatever you could. I was actually going to talk about one of the
binge
last ones.
Binge watch Fuller House.
Yes.
That's
season three.
That is terrifying, actually.
That's horror. So.
Sadly, it's very terrifying. Sorry, go ahead.
Real talk, though, I saw the whole first season.
So did I.
I grew up watching
So
Fuller
you
want to
go watch Battle Royale
and let these two do a recap of
Fuller House?
Only the first season.
Only the first.
Slack.
You're not going to get that time
more.
Back.
Yeah.
You know,
not one
it's gone. It's Netflix is now.
I acknowledge that, and I'm just going to have to live with it. You know?
Okay. So
my
mistake.
Member berries.
I blame
the member berries.
Yes.
I want in the nostalgia. First movie I got up, Chopping Mall.
Nice.
That sounds fun.
Chopping Jim Wynorski.
Mall was fun. It was quite... Oh, it's so funny. So this mall pretty much strikes a deal with some company. They have three large robots that are just going to be security for the mall at night. And of course, the same night they have them installed, there's a lightning strike. And
of course.
And they go haywire. And at the same time, there just happens to be a gang of teenagers who are having a party in the furniture store. And things go down in all manners of the sense. Yes.
But what was great about that movie was that it was an 80s movie that Jim Wynorski, if you know any of his movies at all, he's done a lot of Corman films.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have alumnus from the Corman movies like Mary Warnov and Paul Bartel, if you've ever seen like Eating Raoul or Death Race 2000. You know, it's like there's the usual Corman stable of actors in this, and also the usual Corman stable of terrible effects. But people, but at the same time, when I saw that movie, when it first came out on video, and that was at the time where there was that like robot butler that everyone was trying to get, and this was like right before the NES had the robot that everybody wanted that broke down. Right. So it was kind of a mix between those two together, and you were like, I want a robot butler slash NES robot meets security guard, just not with those bad effects.
Right.
But yeah, I remember loving that movie as a kid, because plus it's bloody as hell, too.
Oh, yeah. It was really great. Actually, the Death of the Week is actually from this film, but we'll get to that in a bit. The second one movie I did see was Knights of Badass.
I'm so sorry.
Mm. I started, directed I couldn't finish it.
Thank God. Sorry. No, believe me. I couldn't even finish it either.
I tried. And I normally finish like every movie. I will not. So I have it on my queue still.
I'm totally fine with that. Do you guys know Don Coscarelli? He did Beastmaster and Phantasm movies.
Oh, and yeah. John Guys of the Phantasm,
End. Yeah.
Bubba Hotep, all those movies.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, I want to see that.
So I had a very tough time making Knights of Badassdom, and you can read about it. It's all out there. Just Google Knights of Badassdom, and then like Google Knights of Badassdom, comma Joe Lynch, comma hell, and you'd probably find plenty of talk about that. But when you make a movie, it's hard because you want to make sure that everybody knows like your vision for the film. And mine was heavily compromised on that one, so much so that I actually went to the DGA and tried to do the Alan Smithy thing. Mm-hmm. And and the politics behind actually making that happen are so complex that I was just like, screw it, I'm gonna forget it. Because if you take your name off of a movie, you lose the residuals too. Mm. And I just thought, like, for that $8 that I'm gonna get from residuals from people watching this piece of crap, fine, why not? So, on our podcast, The Movie Crypt,
right.
cheap shameless plug. We had Don on the show, and I grew up loving the Beastmaster, Mark Singer, those ferrets, Rip Torn. It's like, who didn't? You know, like, but that movie was something that I loved as a kid, and we started talking about how much we loved Beastmaster, and watching his face, it was almost like someone shoved a lemon in his mouth. He just went, but I recognized that face. It's the same face that I got when people would be like, oh, yeah, I like Knights of Badassdom, man. I'd be like, no, you're wrong. No. Let me tell you the 25 reasons. Here's my Uproxx list of the 25 things that are messed up with Knights of Badassdom. But when I said that, his face changed, and I went, what's wrong? He goes, they took the cut away from me. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, everything changed for me perspective-wise, especially about like dealing with movies that you might not like. But again, once you're done with the movie's not yours anymore. It's the audience's. And whatever baggage that they come to it, you have no control over that. They could have a shitty day. They could have, you know, was I not allowed to say that?
No, you can.
Sorry.
It's the internet.
They had a poo-poo day. But, you know, there's so many factors that go into an audience taking in a movie, taking in a story. And I can't control that. Mm-hmm. But there have been fans of that movie, and who am I to say, like, no, you're not allowed to like that movie? You know, it's just it's not my job. But hearing that and hearing that coming from a director whose movie I grew up loving as a kid, and now realizing in context that it wasn't his movie either, it changed everything for me. So so now I go like, all right, you watched that movie. Thanks. That's all I got to say about that.
As a director,
I was like, now you can't say anything about the movie at all.
Do you think you're just kind of, are you as a director kind of like your own worst enemy? Are you like really self-critical? Or
I think every director should be self-critical in certain respects, because it just kind of pushes him or her further in a way. Mm-hmm. For that one, just knowing kind of what we were intending, because we were intending for it to be the Goonies for grown-ups. Mm-hmm. It was not supposed to have any of the Scott Pilgrim crap in the background with all the buttons, you know, like all the hit points and everything, and all that gratuitous VO and all that stuff. None of that was a creative choice done by us. It was done by the accountants at the company that was investing.
Oh. Yeah.
Trust me, long story. But that's when you have a movie that kind of loses its captain in a way. I'm not saying that I was, you know, anybody of any worth, but I had a very clear vision. And then because they just went like, see ya.
Mutiny.
It wasn't even a mutiny. It was just that, you know, the one guy there who saw Shaun of the Dead twice, so he knows everything about horror comedies. That was an actual quote. Don't worry, I got this. I saw Shaun of the Dead twice.
Oh my. Aww.
And I love Shaun of the Dead, but yeah. Still, like, that's the one movie that you're using as a reference point for us. Like, I don't know, man. Like, that's troublesome. But seeing where the movie could have gone and where it is now, it's two different movies, you know? So hopefully someday, maybe in the 10th anniversary or something like that, which is coming up in 3 years. Oh God. maybe like there has been talk about doing finishing the director's cut, and really it's done. It's just the effects need to be finished. Mm. And fun note, here's a little fun note for you. All the visual effects in the movie are unfinished.
What?
Oh.
So that vortex that's flying up above the, all of that is the temp
that
version.
Really weird, yeah.
It's the temp effects that we had the visual effects company do for us so that we can show it in screenings. They weren't finished.
Mm.
But they're in the movie.
They're there. Yeah.
So, you know, and believe me, I watch it and I go like, why? Like, we had it was gonna be good. So
maybe it'll be more interesting now approaching it with some of the backstory.
Yeah.
Good luck. Good luck.
I'll tweet you and be like,
Godspeed.
I finished.
Yeah. Like, if you make it through someday, you will get you'll get a firm handshake.
Okay.
Yes, for a sense of accomplishment. Yes.
Okay. For what it was, I genuinely enjoyed it.
After all that, you should just be like, okay, moving on. You know, that thing.
And so, past that. It's not horror, but I did see Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah.
I mean, hell yeah. Yeah. I saw it last night. It was awesome.
Yes. Yes.
Oh my God. It was great.
I saw it today.
Did you like it?
Oh, wow. I liked it. I thought it was really fun.
It's the most fun Marvel movie yet.
Oh, yeah.
And that's saying a lot because I do enjoy the Marvel movies. I like the serialization of it. I like the different voices that are coming into it now. Everybody from your Shane Blacks to your James Gunns to your Taikas now. Just to see that Marvel is willing to release the reins a little bit from it having that kind of house style and that house tone, which is fine when you're making something, you know, like when they were really kind of world building the MCU, it totally makes sense to not like veer away from it. But now they're in their kind of like cool artsy fartsy phase. Like, remember when Disney in the 70s, like if you look at The Fox and the Hound and Robin Hood.
Love that one.
And which one?
I love both of those.
But like there was this weird kind of sketchier style.
Yeah.
And if you
Robin Hood, definitely.
They almost looked unfinished at points. Mm-hmm. It just had like this kind of cool, almost hipper kind of feel. Mm-hmm. You find out later that all the animators were just getting high, you know. So that's kind of what lended to it. But the fact that Disney was able to give a little bit more free rein to these animators who were coming in past the old Turks and kind of doing their thing, it kind of born some amazing new designs for Disney. And I think the same thing applies here for Marvel, where they're letting directors who normally wouldn't be able to have the kind of field to play in bring their own style to it while still keeping it in canon, you know? Mm. And I mean, I'm sorry, but I hated the first two Thor movies.
Yeah,
not a fan.
A lot of people didn't.
And this is the first Thor movie that I really genuinely loved. And I think it's one of their best movies.
Mm-hmm.
I think. That's just me. That's just on my list.
Right. Well,
a list that I'm coming
up
with right now.
It has some horror because of the villain, essentially.
Oh, yeah.
She's terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God, Cate Blanchett.
Oh, my God, I love her.
The effects, even the effects had kind of like
Goddess of Death, come on. That's
who wasn't rooting for her? She was awesome.
She was amazing. Yeah. Like, they finally have a very worthy adversary.
Yeah.
I want to know where all the blades come from. It totally made me think of, there's an anime and it's like Unlimited Blade Works from I'm like, oh, Fate Stay Night, Unlimited Blade Works.
Oh,
and I'm like, wait, where does she keep getting them from? And there's a thing.
You know what? I was more concerned about her headpiece
falling
off at points where she's like, and now I'm going, huh.
It looked very heavy.
The design was amazing. Disappears. Yes.
I really wanted her just to spearhead someone with him, just like.
I thought it was going to happen at one point during that one fight. I thought she was just going to take one dude out and just like fling him, and see him fly in the background.
Not one person got impaled on that crowd.
Or just like impale him and then have the blood just come over her.
I would have been fine with that. It would have been great if someone got impaled and then she smoothed out her hair and they fell out of her hair from there.
Yes.
I'll see you for the sequel.
Right?
She's got to come back. Come on.
She has to.
She'll come back.
Infinity War.
They're speculating that.
And you didn't really.
Nope.
No, spoiler alert. You didn't really see.
Anticlimactic.
I'm all no body, no proof.
Anticlimactic.
Pictures or it didn't happen.
What? We can spoil.
Well, that's fair enough.
$122 million dollars worth of people saw it this weekend, so I'm sure that some of your viewers watched it. She didn't die.
Yeah.
Actually, I didn't. Wait, hold on. I didn't see the second Thor? After Thor. Credits.
Oh, it's just comedic.
Yeah. Was it with Jeff Goldblum?
Yes. Yeah. God damn it!
Yeah. Oh, my God. Just him being silly.
He was just improvising, you know.
Yeah.
Jeff Goldblum being Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah.
Like, did he try to sell apartments.com at all?
No.
Wow, I'm shocked, actually. That's shocking.
It would have worked, actually.
It would have worked. It totally would have worked. Anything that came out of his mouth would have been totally fine. He could have started, like, quoting Jurassic Park and be like, droppings, and I would have been fine with it. I would have been totally. He could have started talking about brundle flies. I would have been fine with it.
Oh my God, brundle
like, fly. Totally fine with it.
Yeah, it was definitely worth the watch for that last credit sequence. And then he could have just skateboarded the whole apartments.com.
Do you guys have people getting up during your credits?
I never
understand that still. After the first one,
I had to go. You know, it was a necessity.
No, these were the slow.
Are you? Oh no! Not get out of here! Like the movies, there's still movies.
It's a Marvel movie.
Yeah, you should know this by now.
Yeah, yes. You should have been trained by
no
now.
No excuse.
Come on. All right, on to our second segment.
Wait, my God!
Wow, you're just breezing through.
He's so excited. Oh, I was gonna say,
my other people. I forgot.
What are your picks?
Me.
I was waiting for you.
Thor.
So I was like,
and Stranger Things 2. I finished that.
Oh, nice. I'm like halfway through.
Some people bitched about certain things in it where you're like, just stop.
You're just looking for something to bitch about.
Things to bitch about. It's very fun. Yeah, it's very fun. It continues like the vibe of one, but it's a little different. And like, I don't like saying like season one is better or worse kind of a thing. I just think I felt like it was the same thing and then they continued further.
Perfect. That's all you
and
want.
I enjoyed it very immensely. And then I watched a Bollywood movie called Krish, and it's a Bollywood superhero movie.
How was it?
It was cheesy. Well, his name is Krishna, and he becomes a superhero, and so he just shortens his name to Krish because someone's like, "Who are you?" And he's like, "Krish." Because he gets superpowers
who are
from
you?
Aliens.
Krish.
Yeah.
Krish. He's ish. Yeah.
Should have gone with Krishna.
It's fun. I'm curious for the other ones because there's a second and a third.
Oh, there's a trilogy?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Well, it's Bollywood, right?
It is. So. Yeah, I'm like, but there's another one that's like a superhero one that's way more entertaining, but it's more modern. So I'm kind of wondering if they got better, like when they were made more recently.
Were the requisite dance numbers in it?
Absolutely.
I worked on a Bollywood film back in '98,
nice.
And it Which was in one? New York City. This movie called Mihabuba, with at the time their leading action star.
I would
be mangling his name very, very quickly.
Is it Shahrukh Khan? He's one of the big famous
Maybe.
Ones. We'll have to look up the picture later.
If you look up Mihabuba, but it was amazing to watch. You know, they would have these very normal, almost like Nora Ephron-esque romantic comedy scenes in New York City. And then all of a sudden the camera would pan over and you're looking at like the bench from Woody Allen's Manhattan and then there's a whole goddamn dance sequence going on right next door.
Yep.
Like it was and beautiful. And to watch like all the people, and I was just a PA, so I'm just trying to like make people like move on. There's nothing to see here, but there is obviously something to see here and it's majestic looking. It was so cool to see that happen. Like just to go to all these different locations and just basically plop about 8 dancers and let them do their thing. And it looked like they choreographed it perfectly for wherever their setting was.
Nice. You know,
it was really cool. Anyway, sorry. There's my,
Indian,
there's my Bollywood story. I'm getting all the stories up.
Thought? You know, right? You see a Bollywood, you worked on a pop. That's really,
small
really
world
cool.
In this industry.
Yeah.
What are your,
nothing too exciting. I watched Walking Dead and I'm like the only person still watching that show.
I'm watching it. Oh my God. I watch it every week.
Do you like it?
I love it. I'm obsessed with it.
I think I'm still watching it just because I watched it for so many years. And I think it's,
you're invested in the characters.
I am,
and the
absolutely. Carol, that's my queen. But I don't, sometimes it's just really hard, you know, because it's really hard to transition from comics sometimes onto the live action. And I'm not a big fan of King Ezekiel. I'm not going to spoil anything, but they did in this most previous episode, you know, they brought back a character from season one.
Yep.
And I just thought I'm just going to say anticlimactic, like for me.
Interesting.
I was like, you're going to do that, but didn't. Anyways, so I'm watching Walking Dead. Do you have any thoughts on the episode?
Spoiling anything?
You can spoil
it
if you want.
I'm a sucker for the show. Like, and I watched it from the first episode. I've watched it. It was very surreal watching the show and then going to work, and one of the people that's on the show was at work.
Yeah.
So I'd be like, so, yeah, that Negan, huh? Ooh. It's going to be rough. And he's like, yeah, man, yeah, I know. And then it would be very awkward. I'd be like, All right, so they're going to work on our little crappy horror movie here before you go back to Atlanta. But yeah, I'd love that show. I thought it would, like, I'm invested in the characters, and yeah, I kind of have to, no matter what, even when you know, things kind of veer a little more into the mediocre side, mm-hmm, I'm just so attuned to the show, yeah, at this point, and I love watching these characters evolve. I mean, like Steven in particular, going from the pizza boy, mm-hmm, to being really the heart of the show, but before,
yeah,
you know, mm-hmm, spoiler alert, he dies. My bad.
That's been out for too long. So, yeah.
You'd be surprised how many people are like, dude, really? I'm like, come on. Like, at this point, yeah, really? So I want to see it through to the end. Yeah. I'm not a fan of Fear the Walking Dead. That one lost me, yeah, early on.
I've only seen the first season.
It's a show.
It's a show.
But yeah, Walking Dead. But you have another one pick that I'm very interested in.
I did.
I peeked.
Reading
I'm like,
How did you guys know?
What's Oliver watching?
Oh. Well, yeah, I actually rewatched this past weekend. I've seen it like 2 years ago when it first came out. 2015 is when, mm-hmm, it first came out. The Nightmare. It's a documentary. I found it on Netflix. I was just like scrolling and I was like, huh, this is a documentary.
Rodney Asher.
Yeah.
Did you ever see his first documentary?
I did not.
Oh boy, do I have a movie for you guys!
What is it called?
Where's my pen?
Called Room 237.
I've heard of it. It's the
documentary about The Shining.
Shining? Yeah,
yeah. Okay. Rodney's first feature, where basically he kind of kickstarted this new documentary craze, where it takes the idea that, like, all the online video kind of thesis videos, where they're just kind of ripping video clips from all different movies and then, mm-hmm, doing a comment on it. Rodney somehow made this movie where he's using footage from The Shining ad nauseum, Eyes Wide Shut, all the Kubrick movies, tons of other movies, and then having people discuss all the weird fan theories about, mm, The Shining. Mm. And I remember, do you guys know who Bear McCreary is? No? Wow. We're going to have to go over to another podcast and get geeky. He did the score for Battlestar Galactica, The Walking Dead, mm-hmm, S.H.I.E.L.D. He's done all of my movies except for the new one, that new Nacho Vigalondo movie, Colossal. He's embedded, mm-hmm, in the geekscape. And he knew Rodney because of one of his musicians did the score for it. So he asked us over to watch the screening of this crazy little movie that will never go anywhere. So watch the movie, and I loved it, but I'm like, how the hell are you going to pay for the rights for The Shining, like, alone? And he uses it all over the place.
Right.
And then a week later, he got into Sundance.
Wow.
It was amazing. And that kind of forward momentum was able to allow the distributor to pay for the licensing for this movie. It's fascinating. If you love The Shining, even if you have a passing liking of The Shining, you'll never see the movie the same way again. And what I love about Rodney's work, like with The Nightmare, he has this new show on Shudder called, it's like Split Scream or something like that.
We've talked about Shudder. Good service.
Oh, I love Shudder. Yeah. But he has cornered the market in this weird, like, postmodern documentary style, where, mm-hmm, he mostly uses, like, footage from other things and then breaks it down and explicates it. And then also, like, The Nightmare, mm-hmm, shoots new things, where this is essentially a documentary, but the way that he shoots, like, the dramatic recreations are legitimately terrifying. Mm-hmm. Like, holy crap.
Yeah, I remember I watched it alone for the first time a couple years back.
Oh my god, why would you do that to yourself?
The Shadow Man!
it's legitimately terrifying, you know? Like, mm-hmm, the way that he's a feature filmmaker in, like, spirit, but his heart goes towards, like, the kind of reality stuff and, like, the non-scripted, mm-hmm, stuff. Mm-hmm. I could not recommend that movie higher. Good choice.
Yeah.
The Nightmare.
But it's just cool, ooh, because I always thought that topic of sleep paralysis and, mm-hmm, even dreams, you know, by itself, they're so fascinating because it's open to interpretation, and that's terrifying. And have you guys seen it all?
No, I haven't.
Watch it.
Well, I have, Oliver.
Well, it's on that. You said it's on Netflix. I'll be on my queue.
Yes, it's right. So good.
So next segment, real quick. Let's see.
Wow, you didn't even ask me what mine were.
Oh my god, I am
it
the
even
worst.
Says,
so excited.
He's just really
Joe Lynch. Will ask him.
I wrote that myself too. I did that. Go ahead,
Joe.
Challenge.
What have you watched this?
Hit us.
Absolutely nothing, guys. I don't watch. No, no. I
could have been a busy week. Really.
Aside from Thor, I watched. Did you guys see that new Netflix movie Wheelman with Frank Grillo?
Oh no, I haven't. No.
It's great. Joe Carnahan produced it. This new director, Jeremy. Oh God,
like
Smith.
A
I think
wheel?
It is. Wheelman, all one word.
Like a driver?
Yes. Okay. It's essentially, do you remember that movie that came out a couple of years ago called Lock that Tom Hardy did where it's
all in one car? Yeah.
This is essentially Lock mixed with Drive.
Ooh.
It's a movie that takes place entirely in the car following a wheelman who's hired by a bunch of mobsters to drive the car during a heist. And it all takes place in real time. It all takes place over the course of one evening. And it's Frank Grillo from like the Purge movies and the Gray and all that, essentially in the car by himself, sometimes with other people. I don't want to give too much away. It's riveting because you're like midway through, you're going, I've never left the car, not once. There's no shots outside of the car. And if there are shots outside of the car, it's attached to the car. I did a movie similar to that a couple of years ago called Everly with Salma Hayek, where we essentially did it where we were all in one room and the camera could never leave the room. And this guy comes along and bests me again, like son of a bitch. But it's great. And it's on Netflix, so it's absolutely free. Well, free if you have a subscription. But it's great. Like I couldn't recommend it higher, especially if you like Frank Grillo, the guy. He was on Kingdom, that show Kingdom, the MMA show. He's like our new Charles Bronson. I feel like there's no legitimate like gruff badasses right now, like older badasses. The guy's in his 50s and he could literally beat the crap out of everybody in this entire building with one hand tied behind his back and blindfolded. With stuff in his mouth. And someone cut his leg off. All of us gone. The second movie that I watched just because it was Halloween was the seminal classic Tobe Hooper's Poltergeist.
Ooh.
Nice. I had to. It's one of those movies that, like, you know you have your, like, 31 movies that you have to watch during Halloween. It was one that I forgot last year that I always watch. I love that movie so much. I've grown up with it, so it's weird where I started connecting with the kids, and now I connect with the adults. It's really weird. Although, when you watch the show, and when you watch the movie, when I was 6 or 7, when that movie was on HBO every other day, they didn't cut it out when it was, they didn't cut any of the stuff out when it was on at 2 p.m. in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching Joe Beth Williams and Craig T. Nelson rolling joints and smoking like in this PG movie. And they're just casually just rolling J's and just having a conversation while totally high. I'm like, man, the 80s were different. The 80s was a very different time. And that was a PG Spielberg movie. And this was done just casually. You'd never see that today. I related to the kids in one respect, and now I relate to the adults in a very different way. So that's what I'm watching, guys. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Anyway,
two sides to that coin. Right on. So, The Crypt. So, pretty much what we a movie we would like to share with our audience and the panelists here.
So, either ones that like people haven't heard of, or generally they probably haven't heard of it or haven't gotten around.
Well, you guys go first, and I'll try to think of one. I can't actually choose The Abyss, right?
Right.
Because
that would be weird.
That's a little too common.
That would be weird.
People know that.
I know. Yeah. But it also kind of be like, or like, is it because it's the previous segment? Like, I mean, is it just maybe actually the thing I wanted to recommend was our previous segment.
Really?
The Abyss. I just went meta. So,
go deeper.
I'll think of something.
Okay. Well, but first I did want to bring up, since it's called the segment's called The Crypt, you actually have a podcast called
The Movie Crypt.
Right.
but you guys are more focused. You're just The Crypt.
Yeah.
Whereas like, well, we're just in this one box of movies with a crypt. You guys are like much more world-building and expansive. So have at it. The Crypt is yours.
We're building
We'll just call our podcast The Movie. Be really weird, and iTunes would probably kick us off. But I think you guys... You now have the crypt from now on. It's yours.
No.
You're welcome.
It will forever be yours, but we'll borrow it for now.
They can both coexist.
I think so.
No. The only one. No, I'm kidding.
They're different.
All right. So I wanted to recommend House, Japanese film, 1977, directed by Nobuhiko Obayashi. And it's a horror comedy. And, of course, I love my synopsis for some reason. So it says, a schoolgirl and her 6 classmates take a trip to her aunt's house in the country home, and in the home tries to devour the girls in completely bizarre ways. Have you guys ever seen this?
I love that movie.
Yeah, dude.
Have you ever seen it in the theater?
I've seen House, I would love to see it in theater.
It's funny, because that was going to be my recommendation, Steve Miner's House.
You can still say it because I'm not going to talk about it.
I just said it. It's my second choice. There you go.
That's a good one, though. There's a lot of people that haven't heard of it.
I love that movie. William Kath, Greatest American Hero versus Night Court's Richard Mall as a zombie in a house. Directed by one of the guys who played, was it Michael Myers or Jason Voorhees? It was one of those guys. But I love that movie. Anyway, but it's not as good as Your House.
Oh.
Wait, do you have a house up there?
No? I believe we do have the house picture up
there.
That's
a chopping mall robot. Nice try, guys.
Yeah, it has a crazy cover.
It's
I love
so
that
good
cover
it even
too.
Has a Criterion disc.
Yeah, it's part of the
like,
Criterion
come
collection.
On.
Yeah. Well, I like it. It's fucking batshit's crazy. It's unlike anything I've ever really seen before in like today's standards. It's hilarious. It's super tongue in cheek because it has characters like Prof, like one of the girls named Prof, they call her Prof, and then she's like the smart one. And there's a girl called Gorgeous, and she's like the pretty one. And there's one called Kung Fu. She knows
I
Kung
love
Fu.
It. So I'm sensing there's like some archetypes in this film.
Oh,
I
think so.
Just kind of.
So maybe some
just a little. Just a smidge, yeah.
All right. Well, Gorgeous dies, huh?
And
she's got to die.
Dude, they die. The way they die is. You guys got to watch this film.
Okay.
It's
crazy.
Funny. Oh, my God. But it's also very scary, and some of the parts can be really, really creepy and very. Haunting.
Where can you watch this one at?
Criterion. My best guess would be Hulu, because Hulu does have a lot of Criterion Collection. The Criterion Collection. I also started their own streaming site. The name escapes me right now, but they have their own site as well, where you can sign up and you get Criterion Collection. And then I would also just always check Amazon. I'm sure you can rent it for like $3, $4. For that HD, SD, whatever. Yeah, that's where I usually watch movies, rent movies, where I can't find them anywhere else. Hopefully they're on Amazon, rent them, boom. Cool. And that's mine. Carrie?
All right, I'm pulling up on my phone. So mine is Black Sheep.
Oh, that's right.
And not the comedy, because I know there is a comedy.
Man.
Though it is funny. So it's from 2006, and it's from New Zealand. So an experiment in genetic engineering turns harmless sheep into bloodthirsty killers that terrorize a sprawling New Zealand farm. So it's one of those, like, there's, 50,000 sheep to one human ratio, and it's like, they're were sheep, and they just go crazy.
They're
and
were
it's
sheep.
Awesome. Pretty, were sheep.
There is a were sheep in it. And
it's a great
it's
movie.
So over the top, and that's what I love about it. It's super funny. Like, it does not take itself seriously.
It feels like an early Peter Jackson movie.
Yeah, it's
just... Oh, like Dead Alive?
Yeah.
Well, it's
yeah.
just like, gorgeous, too, because it's New Zealand, and then there's just bizarre, because you're like, wait, killer sheep? What? So if you want a bloody good time and, like, funny, I think Black Sheep is hilarious. It's too fun.
It sounds like one of the movies that I would, like, lump with, what is it, Zombievers? I'd get, like, really drunk with my friends and just watch them.
It's better. It's better than Zombievers.
Yeah, I was going to say, the quality
not,
of it's
not to
really
the detriment
good,
of anybody
yeah.
associated with Zombievers, but, it's just, but Black Sheep is great.
Because even though it's, like, super cheesy, it's done, like, high-quality film. It's not made as a B-horror movie.
Oh, I'm so in.
That's awesome.
Kind of like Dead Snow?
Yeah.
Like the way Dead Snow was kind of like...
Yeah, like Dead Snow. Like you talked about Dead Snow.
Yeah, that's another good comparison. So Dead Snow 2.
I need to watch
that. I was like...
Red versus Dead.
Yeah.
There's commies.
So good.
Like,
Darren Mears is in it. It's so good. So much better than the first one, too.
Oh, man,
I love that movie.
Yeah, I gotta watch that, too.
That was our talks on last week. What? Oh, yes.
Ollie?
Sorry.
Are you good?
Sorry. No, sorry. I'm still thinking about the were-sheep. I definitely need to see this movie, but I just remember the trailer a long time ago, watching it, like, over and over again. And then I remember the scene where, it's at the end of the trailer, where, like, they're just looking to the distance and they see, like, a flock of the sheep coming, and they don't know that they're, like, were-sheep, but I need to watch this movie. But my movie is The House of the Devil, 2009. I don't know if you guys have seen this one, but it's...
I haven't, but my friends highly recommended it.
Ty West, he's the director, writer, and editor. He did VHS. He did ABCs of Death. He did the M for Miscarriage, if you remember that one. But the synopsis reads, in 1983, financially struggling college student Samantha Hughes takes a strange babysitting job that coincides with a full lunar eclipse. She slowly realizes her clients harbor a terrifying secret, putting her life in mortal danger.
Dun, dun, dun.
But yeah, definitely this film pays tribute to 70s and 80s horror films. It looks like it's straight from the 80s to me. And even they even shot it on film, 16 millimeters. And they only did this movie. It took 18 days to complete.
Wow.
To shoot. And so it's very, very... I would say it's a little slow, but, like, despite it being slow...
They like to call it slow burn.
Yeah, slow burn. Slow burn. We bring that up a lot.
Yeah.
But I feel like you're still, like, you're on the edge of your seat when you watch this movie, and you're just like, oh, God, what's going to come out of that corner? I don't know. Have you ever seen this?
Oh, my God. Oh. I saw the premiere. I was at the premiere.
Oh, my God.
And it terrified people. The part with A.J. Bowen when he realizes when, is it Greta Gerwig, when she's not the babysitter?
Yeah.
Is one of the moments that I'll never forget in the theater because, well, first off, he blows her away. You don't see it coming. Mm-hmm. The crowd got off their feet. It was amazing. Like, you don't get that opportunity to, like, totally freak out an audience like that they just didn't see it coming. And plus, the whole, like, satanic panic thing was, in the 80s, was becoming a thing. So yeah. I think Ty, like, really tapped into that. I mean, he's one of the most exciting filmmakers working today, like, because he's just jumping from, you know, from this movie to the, what's the one that he did with the haunted houses that he did with, like, Pat Healy and Sarah Paxton, The Innkeepers.
He
did that
too.
One. He did The Testament. You know, he did In the Valley of was it In the Valley of Madness or something like that? In the Valley of Violence, John Travolta Western. So it's like he's hopping from genre to genre, but he also kind of leaves his permanent stamp with it as well. Mm-hmm. And House of the Devil, I think, is arguably one of the best horror movies of, like, the last 10, 15 years. And at the same time, you look at it and go, like, that was made in 79, yeah. like down to the title cards and everything.
Yeah. Even, like, they would zoom in really, really quickly, like they did in the 80s. And you're just
totally,
like, what the heck?
Yeah, it feels like they totally got the style right.
Yeah, but I definitely recommend this. It's such a hidden gem, and I'm surprised not a lot of more people know about this. So please watch this movie. I think it was on. I watched it on Netflix a couple years ago.
I saw it on Netflix.
I don't know if it's still on Netflix, but. I don't know. Check it out. Please,
I think
The
Innkeepers is on Netflix, so
yeah.
I believe
that's great. That's another great movie.
I've been meaning to check that out. Dang, it's been on my queue. Andrew, do you have?
Let me think. Okay. I will recommend, just because it's the first thing that popped in my head at this moment, was Wes Craven's Serpent in the Rainbow.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason why is because Shout Factory, Scream Factory, just put out a new Blu-ray in the last couple months. And it's one of those movies that I, like when you mentioned, I think it's just like the whole old feel and how I felt like when I saw that in the theater. I used to have this kind of deal with my dad where he would take me to the movies on a weeknight if I got my homework done.
Huh.
So the, you know, all the movies that I remember like earning, like Silver Bullet. And, oh God, what was another one? Creepshow 2.
Mm-hmm.
But Serpent in the Rainbow, the Fly. What? 10-year-old, no, not even. I was 9 when my dad took me to the theater to see David Cronenberg's The Fly. He didn't like them. My mom was the one who liked them. Actually, my mom took me to my first movie when I was 2, which was Dawn of the Dead.
Oh.
She couldn't find a babysitter.
Nice.
My mom rules. But what was great was that she got me Fangoria issues like right after to show me like don't worry this is how the sausage is made, like it's all fake, but it really helped me kind of be able to see past the scares and to see how they actually did it. And I remember when Wes Craven, you know, at that point he was the Nightmare on Elm Street guy, you know, he was, you know, he'd made Deadly Friend and I think Shocker came out before this, but he wanted to do something a lot more serious. And so Bill Pullman plays an investigator who goes to Haiti to basically investigate these voodoo trappings and gets kind of sucked into the world of voodoo himself. And I just remember how unrelentingly dreadful the movie is. Like, you just sit there you're cringing the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a sequence in the movie where Bill Pullman, who is Lone Star from Spaceballs, at least when I saw it, I'm like, hey, it's Lone Star. Why are they burying him? And it's terrifying because, you know, he gets turned into, you know, an old school zombie. Like, there's not the Romero zombies, but the kind of
the
Haitian white zombie, the Val Luton, the old fashioned zombie.
It was a pharmacy company researching stuff so that they could supposedly do it for anesthesia.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And he unfortunately gets this powder blown on him, and then he goes through the same thing that everybody else goes through. And other than, say, maybe Kill Bill Volume 2, I've never seen a movie where I truly felt trapped in that coffin with him. I mean, you know, there's that Ryan Reynolds movie Buried, whatever it was, which was fine, but it became more like it was more of a joke than anything else, and it wore out very quickly. And that sort of thing, like, you don't want to punish the audience for them being in this one space for so long. But if you do it in a sequence, like the way that Wes Craven did that in Serpent of the Rainbow, it doesn't leave you, you know, like it's makes it its personal stamp. And then 30 years later, you're talking about it on a video podcast. You know, like that I knew back then, I'm like, I'm going to be talking about this someday on a newfangled technology mm-hmm. that I can't quite wrap my head around now, but I want to talk about this movie. And the new version on the Blu-ray has like new interviews and everything. It's really great. But if you haven't seen Serpent of the Rainbow and you want to veer outside of the Wes Craven comfort zone, I'd recommend that one.
Right on. Yeah, I completely agree with you. That movie, it feels like it has some sort of musk to it, like when you're watching it, like that dread.
You feel a little dirty afterwards. Mm-hmm. Like you get the kind of grime under your fingernails. You feel like you've been buried.
Yeah.
And by using someone like Bill Pullman, who was a very likable actor, he seemed like a normal guy that you'd have beers with or whatever. But then you see him being put through the ringer the way that these characters do. And you feel for him, and the empathy that you have, and you watch how he goes through this horrible night. It's a nightmare. It's a waking nightmare. Mm-hmm. There's a moment where they strap him down and they're torturing him that anyone who watches the movie and doesn't cross their legs while watching this film, especially guys, is dead when they're watching it, because it's brutal. But it doesn't show you anything.
Right.
And that's the power of Wes Craven, is that he could have, especially back then when he had carte blanche. You know, like, do you remember Deadly Friend? Did you ever see Deadly Friend with Christy Swanson? There's a part where the old woman from Throw Mama from the Train is in that movie. And she gets, this is a gif, you can look it up, gets a basketball thrown at her by Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And it's this gratuitously disgusting basketball shot where it hits the dummy's head. And in slow motion, just, it's amazing. It looks like you guys were standing right next to her. But, you know, back then he could get away with that because he was the Freddy guy. And then splatter was the kind of, genre du jour at that moment. So he could have gone very gory, and he didn't. And it actually made it more disturbing. So I think I think it's one of Wes Craven's best movies. Oh. Dropping the mic now.
That's it.
We're done.
All right. So let's just move along, and let's get to Mayhem now, finally.
Oh, boy, that thing, that old chestnut.
The hoary.
Yeah.
Mayhem. A virus spreads. A virus called ID7.
That's all you need to know. A virus spreads.
That's it. And it spreads through an office complex, causing white-collar workers to work out to act out their worst impulses. Right on. So that's the synopsis. Go ahead, and we'll just play the trailer, and we'll talk over that.
Necessarily all the worst impulses, because some of them you're like, all right.
Some of those posts are pretty good.
They're just impulses, you know. They're just like,
you just have
sometimes
no breaks.
You're really happy.
Yeah,
you don't have that moral tourniquet that tells you I shouldn't be doing this, or I shouldn't be displaying this, or I shouldn't be doing this in public. And and this movie was shot in lovely Belgrade, Serbia. Now I'm doing a running commentary.
Why Serbia? I was curious. I noticed that
not?
In the credits.
No, actually, it was. At first, it was on one level. It was purely financial because the movie that I had done before this, Everly. We went to Serbia purely for financial reasons. Believe me, it was not my first choice to be like, I want to go halfway around the world.
You're in a building the whole time, so it's
that was one of the advantages.
Where it is.
That was part of my initial pitch with the movie was like, I can shoot it in Timbuktu, and then they're like, how about Timbuktu? And I'm like, that was a saying. But when I was there making Everly, I had such an amazing time with the crew. The crews were fantastic. The local cast was great. Just everybody that was there made that experience worth me exploring going back to Serbia for this one. Because, like, when you're a filmmaker, time is money. And, you know, if every day counts. If we made this movie in Pittsburgh or Louisiana or Vancouver, which we checked out, it would have been 15 days or 16 days. Whereas we went to Serbia and it was 26 days.
Oh, okay. Nice.
And the difference between a 16-day movie and a 26-day movie is huge.
Yes.
So it was, on that level, totally financial. On a practical level, I was able to come back and work with all these great people that I had already worked with. Like, when we called them, they actually said, like, oh, so the guy with all the blood from the last film, you come back. We have more blood from your last movie. We use rest. And it was, and they did. We totally used a lot of the blood from Everly. So thank you, Everly.
That's awesome.
But working with that crew again was maybe the only reason why I got what I got, because everybody was so in sync. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, when you guys sit down here, you can have a shorthand. I had the same thing with a lot of these guys. So as much as I did not want to go halfway around the world and be away from my family, knowing that I was going to be able to put more on screen and get what little money we had to put on screen as possible, it made all the difference, you know? So that's why we were in Serbia again. But again, it was a fantastic time. I really could not have made the movie without them. So thank you, Serbia. I know you're watching.
Thank you, Serbia. All right. So just a quick little overview of the film. Release date, November 10th, right?
I love it. It's correct.
Yes. Yes.
Well, limited release.
Yes. Right? Limited release, but also VOD and iTunes movies. It's basically available everywhere. I'm turning Italian. No, we're playing in select theaters around the country. I would highly recommend seeing it in the theater, because we shot it super wide. We mixed it really loud. And this is the type of movie that you want to see with a crowd. You want to, like, mm-hmm. it's a fun movie, and mm-hmm. I deliberately made that. Mm-hmm. You know, when you work in this town and you hear people say, like, oh my God, I loved your movie, it's so fun. It's kind of bullshit. It's like it's a passive-aggressive way of actually saying, like, I didn't like it, but I don't want to tell you to your face.
I said fun earlier, and I mean it.
So. No.
Okay. And I would say this movie's fun, and we mean it literally.
I deliberately wanted to make a movie that was a fun blast of a movie.
Yes.
Because when you're dealing with kind of office politics and and you know, the minutiae behind all those dumb politics, and then watching these characters do really awful things while they're infected, I think if I didn't have a sense of humor to it, or if my actors weren't as charming as they were, I think the movie would come off really mean.
Yeah.
And I did not want that. Like, I wanted people to have fun. I wanted this to be a roller coaster ride. I didn't want it to be a lecture. I didn't want it to be a punishing experience like some of those, like, old, but 10-year-old French films where you're just like, that was an exercise in brutality. You know, it's like, no, I want people to have fun with it. So that's really the kind of vantage point that I was coming from, the point of view. And thankfully, you know, people have responded to it. But
we think you succeeded.
Oh, thank you, guys.
I love it.
but taking it to, like, the festivals, since we've been doing festivals since March, and it has been a wild ride. But I've been able to see it in front of an audience. And some movies are just, not, like, you can tell, are not made for the big screen as much as others, you know. But we tried to shoot this thing as wide as possible, and we tried to make it seem like something that, you know, even down to the sound design being where you feel like you're in the building because the 5.1 is, like, behind you and stuff. We tried to make it feel like you were in there with them. Mm-hmm. And every time we've shown it with audiences, you know, big and small, it's always been people cheering and laughing, and I'm like, this is what I do it for, you know. It's not the same when it's at home and someone's, like, texting and watching at the same time, and you just want to, like, burst the wall down like the Kool-Aid Man and be like, "Oh yeah, now stop watching that. You're text and watch the movie." You can't control that, but at least in the theater, you know that you're going to be able to see a good presentation of it with hopefully other people, maybe some disgruntled employees, you know. Maybe we can save anybody from going postal or whatever.
Quit your office job.
that's basically the message. Yeah. So we're playing in theaters and VOD. It's everywhere this weekend.
Nice.
Any reactions during any of the festivals surprise you? Or any moments where reactions surprised you?
Yeah. Every time a boss got killed, one of the kind of employees, lots of cheers. Like, I did not see that coming. Another one was there is a very buried, or at least I thought it was buried, is a very much like mixed berries. I should never use that term. There's a mixed berries joke. There's a joke that I added in the post-production stage that was just kind of like off the top of our heads, mainly because one of the ADR guys that came in, we do like a loop group thing where we have like 10 or 15 people come in and they do all the oohs and ahs and all the people yelling and screaming FU in the background.
Oh, okay.
Can I say F you?
Yeah, you can.
Can I say fuck you?
Yeah, you can.
Okay. You already did, so you're good. All
right, well, someone was going to bleep it out, if anything. Sorry, Steve. Steve is in the room.
No, it's fine.
All right, sorry, Steve. Hey. So while we were doing this loop group day, and you know, we're doing improv lines, we have like specific lines that we needed done. Mm-hmm. We called lunch, and then when we came back, one of the guys who was in the loop group clearly went to lunch in his car and smoked a big fat joint. So he walked in and it was just like, whoa, woo, somebody's having a shirt laundry party or something. And I don't know what kind of compelled the moment, but I go, hey, did you smoke in there? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, you know that movie Half-Baked? He's like, yeah. And I mentioned to him, there's like a joke in the movie where one of the characters goes like, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. You're cool, fuck you. I'm out, right?
Yeah.
You caught that,
I
huh?
caught that. Yeah. I was like, that was
born purely out of improv because there was a guy who was high in the ADR room.
It was destiny.
And I threw it in. But I threw it in. It was something that was never planned. And yet, every single screening that we've been to, it gets the biggest goddamn laugh. And I sit there and... part of me is going like, well, now I know who I'm going to party with after the movie is over. Someone's holding. But it's just one of those moments of inspiration that was born purely organic from this process that was not fully planned out that ended up being like one of the more memorable moments of the movie. Now, did I think that a half-baked joke would, you know, best a lot of the kind of scripted jokes that we had? No. God damn it. Like, did not see that coming at all. But look, any idea that comes your way that ends up being like a good idea is always beneficial to the movie. Mm-hmm. So
that was a great story. I love that. I love that.
He didn't sound like he was impressed. He was like, well, that was a great story.
Honestly, no, I'm
you
just,
know, Anthony's half baked right now, so just, he's kind of just like nodding and you know.
Like, yeah.
Every time I heard that, I was like, that can't be from half baked.
Yes, it is. Yep.
That's shocking. That's awesome. Yeah, but you
who doesn't love those kind of Easter eggs, though?
Right?
It feels like you're hanging out with friends, and they say a quote, and you're like, oh, yeah, like, I know that movie, too. And it's like it, using pop culture in a way to just kind of connect us even further, even if it is half-baked.
Because in my head, I was like, no, that's too random. This is a horror comedy. That was just a stoner comedy. Like,
welcome to the world of Joe Lynch, where deep pulls and quotes from Risky Business and talking about Dave Matthews Band permeates through my work.
Oh, that's right, Dave Matthews Band. That was great, too. You had a cameo in the film.
Sure. Yeah, or I guess you can call it that.
Ray, the IT guy.
Ray, the IT guy.
Oh,
yes.
My God. Yeah. So I actually was able to find the clip here.
Oh, great.
I love the, it's not on the clip, but I love the clip afterwards where he says, doctor can't do much until you tell me where it hurts. That was so funny.
So that, am I allowed to talk over my terrible acting?
Well, actually, no, let's just give it its time and then we'll give you.
I'm really busy right now. Fucking, why don't you fucking work? Ray!
Hey!
Hi.
Hey. We need your help. Holy shit.
Burning of the Reaper?
How'd that happen?
Well, we asked for his help, and then he said he was busy.
Really? Welcome to IT.
I need you to hack into someone's computer.
And I need Interpol to get off my back, so what else is fucking new? Who are we talking about?
Irene Smythe.
Oh, fuck her.
Yeah, I love that. That's where it ends.
So, so the story behind that was I ran out of Serbian actors who could speak English. No joke. You know, because we shot in Serbia, my talent pool was kind of relegated to just the local Serbian actors, but also London and Spain and Germany and stuff. But really, pickings were slim, and we were running out of budget. So... We had to find someone local and just could not find anybody with that would be good, that looked the part, but also could make it so that I didn't have to dub them after.
Mm-hmm.
And like the week before we wrapped and we still didn't find the guy, and my producer's like, why don't you do it? And he's like, you do that acting thing. I'm like, no, look, the last thing that I want to do right now is to I just want to make my days, man. I don't want to act too. But I had such a good time with Steven and Samara, and it was almost like, well, I want to play too.
Right.
So the second to last day, and it was their last day on shooting, I surprised everybody. That mustache, totally real.
I was
going
to ask, the hair and the mustache.
The hair and the mustache,
it looks
all
great.
Real.
Yeah, I believe it.
I had a full, because I do like a production beard, like the first day of shooting, I let it go. And then just let it cultivate itself. But by the time we were done shooting, I had a nice, thick bush. And I whacked it all off and just kept the porn stash. And boy, the looks that I got on set. No one knew it was me at first. They were just like, who is this guy? Get the porn actor off set.
I had trouble. Like,
and that wig, too?
Yeah.
That wasn't a wig. That
okay,
was me.
Okay, sorry. Oh, that's no, what that I said. Wig. No, I said, no. Is that your hair?
All real. That okay. was all real. Yeah, that was all me.
That was you or not.
I kind of miss it. I know. I do kind of miss it.
You
I also
were
miss
hilarious.
The,
what are you talking about? Like,
I missed the 40 pounds that I was also. All that meat. All that Serbian meat, man. Holy crap. But again, it's one of those things where it's like it was born out of necessity. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, I remembered my lines enough to be able to make the day. But it was a blast. And it was just working with those guys was just so much fun that I wanted to play too.
Nice. So I wanted to ask you, so what's this moment? Sorry, I can't even talk right now. So
I know, you're so nervous that I'm here.
He's so excited.
What does this film mean to you, and what do you want the audience to take from it after they view it?
Well, I mean, the movie has a very clear message at the end of the film, which I don't want to give away because you can see it November 10th in theaters and VOD, so find out for yourself. But it does have a message, and, you know, this is definitely my most personal movie. I never thought I would ever say that. And usually you're supposed to keep that for your Oscar movie. But I was working a corporate job in between movies, you know, and that's just kind of the harsh reality of what it's like to work in the business. So if you want to make movies, you really got to want to make movies because it's not a normally financially stable model for people. So after I was done with Everly, I had to work. So I ended up working for this corporate job, and it just wasn't really for me, but I had to do it. Mm-hmm. And when Mayhem came along, I got it while I was working there. So I read it in my cubicle, and I'm just going like, is someone writing this for me? Can they watch me? Like, I completely connected to the character. And, you know, in the past, the other movies that I've done, I've always wanted to make those movies, but this one I just felt like this weird, for the first time really, I felt this weird inherent need to make this movie. And that was really the driving force for the movie all the way through. And, you know, everything that happens to Derek mirrors me. So the fact that I'm here with you guys now talking about my movie is proof positive that you do have to kind of follow your passions and don't let work kind of envelop you, and don't let life's decisions or life's responsibilities hold you back from making art and making yourself happy. So it's a, you know, it's a nice message movie wrapped up with a lot of blood and nail guns and buzzsaws. So yeah.
Did someone steal your coffee mug?
Yes, they did. Yes, they goddamn did. Yes, they did. Goddamn it. It's one of the things that I remember from the corporate world. Like, that was the beauty of having to work in the corporate world while I was developing this, because I was, like, taking notes. Like, every time someone said, let's discuss, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to use that one. but in this case, like, yeah, I had a coffee mug. Oh, it was a coffee mug with my Boston Terrier on it, and it just disappeared one day.
What?
I was devastated. But that's, like, one of the few things that when you're working in a very sterile environment like the corporate world, you only get so much. That shows, like, this is who I am. And, you know, we specifically designed that mug to be very indicative of, like, either who Derek was or his feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Actual Easter egg for that mug. That mug is actually designed after Bruce Lee's jumpsuit in Game of Death.
Mm.
So, and which is very much very reminiscent of Mayhem. So,
yeah.
So there, all you Bruce Lee fans out there, there you go.
And you're actually used it as a weapon at one point. Mm-hmm. That was awesome. I love that.
Even the mug has an arc.
The mug knuckles?
Mug knuckles. God damn it. Why didn't I think of that?
Yep.
Hashtag mug knuckles.
Hashtag mug knuckles.
Hashtag me at mug knuckles. Please. No. Hashtag mug knuckles at me. Don't hashtag me and then get some guy named mug knuckles. Be really weird.
So unfortunately, we are rapping. We have to rap. I just want to give you the platform, the stand, the stage, one last time, just to say pretty much whatever you'd like to say pertaining to your film or just aspiring filmmakers in general.
Wow, no pressure at all. Look, if you like movies about workplace hassles, if you hate your job, if you hate your boss, if you've always wanted to, like,
stick it to the man,
this is the movie for you. All I ask, don't steal the movie. I know that there's a lot of choices out there. I know you don't have a lot of money to spend on content. I know, because, you know, your Hulus and your Netflixes have it all. But a lot of people put a lot of effort into making this movie, and it was not a big budget film. And that whole fallacy of like, oh, no one's going to know if I press this button, and everybody's saying that. So that means that those residuals that are the reason why I'm being forced to go back to the corporate world are that's how it happens. So save me from having to go back to work, please, or at least work on the next movie instead of going back to corporate life. Don't steal the movie. You'll feel better about yourself. My kids will be happy. They don't have to eat bread sandwiches anymore. God damn it.
Bread sandwiches.
So see the movie. It comes out November 10th on VOD in theaters. I recommend theaters, but if you can't, go see it on VOD or iTunes.
On the biggest screen you can find.
Even if your screen is the biggest screen. And if your screen is really that big, then I'm coming to your house and I'm watching the movie with you.
And I want an invite.
Done.
There you go. All right. Well, that does it for episode 6 of Horror Movie News. Again, you can find me everywhere at Tony B. Dead, TonyBDD.
Okay. And you guys can find me online at Carrie D. Lane. That's KARIDLANE.
And I'm Oliver Drennan. Follow me on all social media platforms at Ollie Dreamer.
And I'm at the Joe Lynch. And there you go.
Boom. Done. Out. Peace out.
To visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.